So now you were involved in a lot of activities in the university and library, public library, mm-hmm. and also IMC or the other community center also.
So. Yeah.
But, and you described the participant activities.
Yeah, community-based participatory culture, mm-hmm. I think, is one way to describe, to connect all of my interests. So about 4 years ago, when I started to become involved with the Zine Library here, I also became involved with the Multicultural Center Library. That's a migrant daycare that needed to have a library rebuilt. In fact, one of the things that I tell people that I do in my spare time is fixing broken libraries, because the Zine Library here had fallen into disarray. The library there at the Multicultural Center had as well. And what becomes important with these kinds of what I call grassroots community libraries is that you have to understand who it is that uses them and what it is they, what their hopes and dreams are mm-hmm. for them. And so that often involves a lot of talking before you start actually doing.
Oh, it is the first time for me to listen about the multicultural community center.
Yes.
That's where it is.
So that is out in a nearby community called Rantoul. That's a place where a big Air Force base closed, and so the city has been struggling with a lot of, some homelessness, a lot of poverty. It's a place where migrant workers come, especially during June and July and other parts of the year, to harvest crops or to work in agricultural businesses that are nearby. And so the Multicultural Center, for a very long time, wanted to start a library for the kids.
Oh, really?
And so it's a multicultural, multilingual library.
Mm-hmm. So there you sometimes go and have a workshop?
We do. We go out, we solicit books to take out there, particularly Spanish language books. We have organized it into, it sort of looks like a school library. Mm-hmm. So they have children from infant until, I think grade 4 or 5. And the Multicultural Center, you know, is always needing a lot of help from the community because they have large influxes of students during certain times of the year, and then the residents from the area use it as well. And so we've been trying to build a library that is for the youngest to their parents.
So in the library, the book, where will come? Does it donate?
Donations.
Donations.
Yes. Yeah, all the books there have been donated.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much for your explanations. We are very interesting. Mm-hmm. You are working in the university and also the community-based.
Yes.
But that kind of activities, you are the person who learned the library or information science. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they go to the community like
yes.
you.
Yeah, sometimes we look for ways to engage with the public. So it's, I think, community outreach or public outreach. And for me, that's taken the form of working with libraries. Mm-hmm. It's also taken the form of starting an archive of historical materials and local zines here at the Independent Media Center.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a way of sort of giving back to the community, but also, to my view, it's a way of helping people see that libraries and archives are places they can find accessible, and they might want to work in someday.
Mm-hmm. But in Japan, the librarian is, the image of librarian is more work at in library.
Yes.
So how about your students? Your students, how do you think they love to go outside?
I think that students are always looking for opportunities to gain experience. Mm-hmm. And so one of the beautiful parts about this being a community with a university and a community that has a top-ranked library school is that these places become almost like laboratories for students to work in and gain experience and to interact with the community. Many of my students want to do public service in libraries or archives or museums. Mm-hmm. And so these kinds of spaces are ideal for them to learn how to do those things.
And also the Illinois University also different kinds of libraries are there.
Mm-hmm.
So each library has some, how can I say, some events or exhibition to open for community.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot. I think as the years go by, there was much more separation between the community and the university, and that's changing, and I think for the good. Yes.
So is that changing? Why happened? For some reason there?
You know, it's a state-funded institution. I think that the public is curious about what we do. Mm-hmm. I think that people who work at the university realize they're also part of the community, so mm-hmm. there shouldn't be these divisions between mm-hmm. people that live outside the university and people who work in it, because we live in these communities as well.
Yeah, but most of university person don't think that was the way you stay.
That's true. I take the expectations for public outreach very seriously. Yes.
And you are also interested in oral history, so I went to your oral history workshop at the mm-hmm. public urban free library.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have such kind of workshop in the library.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my first workshop about oral history for members of the community who want to do family history or community history or history with the veterans that are in their families. And I'm hoping to do more. I've been talking with local area archivists about how it is that I can participate and collaborate with them in collecting oral histories. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to start an oral history project since the Independent Media Center is almost 20 years old, to talk with the people who mm-hmm. first started this place mm-hmm. and add that to the archive that we have here mm-hmm. at the IMC.
Yeah, that is very important for community and also IMC. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was really intrigued by, I'm not sure if you can hear me well,
yes.
and just started talking all of a sudden out of nowhere, sorry. So yeah, I was really intrigued about your research interest too, interrogating naming practices mm-hmm. of cultural heritage collections. Particularly the interrogating part. what do you do in the...
So how does that work? So I think when you think about what it is that we call things, the names that we give people or the names that we give the things that we put in our collections, that's an act of power. Mm-hmm. So who gets to decide what things are called or how things are organized? In my world, we call that representation. And so when I talk about interrogating these practices, we're often talking about contested territory like gender or sexuality or any ways that people self-identify. And so as we start to think about, for example, how I might organize a zine library or a school library for migrant children, the names are important. The mm-hmm. the terms that we use to describe things are critical. And I mm-hmm. think that one of the theoretical structures that I bring to this is something that I'm seeing academics discuss more and more often, which is something called radical empathy, mm-hmm. which is trying to recognize that we each bring our own understanding to any situation, and we have to do better than that. We have to understand that there are multiple ways of describing, multiple ways of creating representations, so that we don't shut people out.
Mm-hmm. I see. So it has something to do with critically thinking about classification schemes, subject headings, and such. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and really even less structured things like mm-hmm. what our categories look like.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your expression is very interesting. So you are interested in the zine library, how to categorize mm-hmm. and how to give name, more simple name.
Yes.
Not like the academic
right.
version. But the zine itself is very, very, very difficult to categorize.
Yes. They are. I think the way that we organize the zine library here is in broad categories. Mm-hmm. But every zine is about many, many things. Mm-hmm. And so one of my projects is to try to it's easier to have something that has many, many things in it in a digital space. Mm-hmm. So to have a catalog online, you know, people have to know where the box is, where the zine lives. But the box can never fully describe the content of the mm-hmm. zine. So the box where it sits, you know, is our best guess for how someone might find it.
So we understand you are... What is your specialist and what you are doing? So it's connected now.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And then the last music, could you introduce?
Yes. Mm-hmm. This last piece is a song by Kate Bush called mm-hmm. Wuthering Heights. It's from her album, The Kick Inside, from 1978. I love the story about how this song came to be as much as I love the song. Apparently, it was written when she was 18 years old in one sitting at the piano on March 5th, 1977, and during a full moon. And so to imagine an 18-year-old sitting down and writing this piece of music is incredible.
Mm-hmm. How beautiful voice.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Tomson, music 3, お願いします. どうぞ. Thank you very much for coming, Haruka no show. We want to talk more, but the next time we will keep the story. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ryuta-san, arigatou gozaimasu. WRF is an open forum for the Urban Champagne community. Views expressed are those of speakers and don't represent WRF Urban Champagne Event Media Center with Urban Socialist. Thank you very much for listening, Harukana Show from WRFU Abuna. This is the time for ending. We will see you next Friday at the same time. Have a good weekend. See you then. Bye-bye.